106.6.
Okay, that was Old Suits with Say You Will. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. Old Suits are a new alternative pop band from Manchester, and are formed from previous bands including Random Project and Kid Galahad, the latter of which had a fantastic track called Punk, which I used for one of my Grand Theft Auto 4 clip videos. So I'll post a link from that on the Facebook page. That's well worth a look. Now, the debut EP, On Becoming a Ghost, is out now. And Old Suits features a good friend of mine, Jenny J. Gartland, on bass and vocals. The four-track EP starts with a slow anthemic It's Never Easy, a piece which will take a long time to fade from the memory after hearing it. And there's also Now You're a Ghost, which has a touch of muse about it, while both Say You Will, which you've just heard, and the more upbeat Dance with the Dead, both sound like rather classic early New Order, I think. Now, Old Suits are playing on Friday the 24th of February, that's this Friday, at 6:30 at Crark in the Northern Quarter, where they'll be launching the EP. So get down there for 6:30 on Friday. Okay, so back to business. And the DVD Fever Show is a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. If you've got anything to say, DVDFever.co.uk, it's a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, because I say so. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Just before I get into what's on the show this week, I just going to mention to the 80s Revival Disco with Kaz Matthews, which is on the this coming Saturday at 8 o'clock till midnight. And she said that a fantastic night was had by all at the last one, so she's back again. Kaz Matthews will be at the Mare and Foal this Saturday and also the last Saturday of every month to follow. She's spinning all those fantastic 80s tunes to whisk you back in time. It's not all just wham-bam, so come on boys, get your dancing shoes on too. Fancy dress is optional. It's up to you if you want to dig out your latest 80s gear. That's the 80s Revival. It's heard on Manchester's 106.6 every Thursday from 6 till 8 and sponsored by the Mare and Foal. I think my show should be sponsored by Lockett's because I keep needing to cough every time, usually in the middle of a sentence. Okay, so what's going up in this show? Well, I'll start off with a review. I'm going to have a look at Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy with Gary Oldman and Colin Firth, heading an all-star cast. Then we've got Top 10 Movie Charts. Then we've got some new releases. What we've got this week? I've got Safe House and One for the Money. That's two of them. And also the new DVDs out this week, including Real Steel and Warrior. So we're going to start off with Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And I'll start off with this review by the admission that I've never seen the original series. So I can't compare Gary Oldman to Alec Guinness, even though it feels like the former is trying to do a COD impression of the latter, and I kept waiting for him to say, "These aren't the droids you're looking for." Great impression, I'm sure you'll agree. Now, as the film begins, Jim Prideau, Mark Strong, goes to see Control, John Hurt, who tells him that a Hungarian man is coming with the name of a mole, the mole that the Russians have planted in the high echelons of the British Intelligence Service. Right at the top of the circus, as they call it, and that they have been there for some time. He adds, "There's a rotten apple, Jim. You'll have to find it." That's a better impression of John Hurt than my impression of Alec Guinness. And the whole thing is known as Operation Witchcraft, and the Soviet source is being housed at a secret London address to keep him safe. We later learn that the mole can only be one of five men, and that George Smiley, Gary Oldman, is brought out of semi-retirement and tasked with tracking him down. He chooses to work with Peter Gwillem, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Mendel, Roger Lloyd Pack, and the investigation into which begins by going to Control's flat and finding pictures of the agents taped to chess pieces on his desk. Now, the film itself has a perfect 70s tinge of smoky offices where the walls will reek of tobacco, which the encoding on the disc doesn't really process perfectly. Alas, what started off as being a film I was really looking forward to just ended up being purely a lot of stylish-looking shots with a slow panning across or slow zooming in and everyone looking incredibly serious. Smiley goes to interview everyone who might know something, and it's all just, let's have a scene of two people here, then let's have a scene of two people, different people there, and then let's have another scene of different people there here. And so it goes on until things slightly come together. By the time the mole was revealed, I completely failed to care. Now, Gary Oldman deserved a Best Actor nomination for a lot of films in the past, but this is not one of them. The film didn't deserve to win BAFTA's Best Adapted Screenplay or Outstanding British Film either. Presented in the original theatrical ratio in 1080p high definition, as I mentioned earlier, there are flaws in the encoding process, so it doesn't look quite as good as it should do. There are times when it does evoke the 70s period perfectly well, though. The sound is in 5.1 DTS HD Master Audio, and delivers nothing out of the ordinary, really, for a drama with little or no audio challenges. It's just mostly dialogue. The extras are as follows. We've got featurettes. And I know the word featurettes indicates that they're brief, but there's only 9 minutes across all four of them. As such, the chat from the cast and crew members is just too brief to be of any real use. There's one about George Smiley, then Inside the Circus, the home of the Secret Service. Shadow World talks generally about the film, while one about John le Carré, well, he's obviously the guy who wrote it. Then we have some interviews, four again. We've got Gary Oldman, Colin Firth, Tom Hardy, and one with the director Thomas Alfredson and the writer Peter Strawn. Now, these are Q&As with the captions sort of asking the questions and those on screen giving the answers. I guess it's the most simple way to do it. There's also a separate interview with John le Carré, which runs for about half an hour. It's done in a conventional style with an off-camera interview, although I'm not quite sure who's asking the questions. You can't really tell from the voice. But it's a worthy watch if you're a fan of his work. Then we have deleted scenes. There's five, the second being a very nondescript one featuring a green screen which looks like the film The Circus in that way, rather than creating it in a studio. That said, there are scenes involving a lift, which are clearly green screened. Out of the five, I couldn't see any scenes at all that needed to be put back in. There's a UK premiere featurette, which is just about 5 minutes long and has talking heads saying a lot of this and that whilst on the red carpet. Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy Sky Movie Special, which is 20 minutes long and does what it says on the tin. It's rather like clips mixed in with the interviews. Photo gallery with 20 pictures. And there's also a couple of audiobooks, but it's chapter one of each for The Honourable Schoolboy and Smiley's People. I mean, these chapter ones, they last about an hour each, but, well, presumably they're only the first chapter, so as to serve as a taster to make you buy the whole thing. So if you want to hear Michael Jaston speak for more than 2 hours, then you can go out and buy them. Well, go on Amazon and buy them, they're probably on there. There's also an audio commentary from the director Thomas Alfredson and also the main man Gary Oldman. There's an audio description throughout the film, a teaser trailer which is about an hour, no, 1 minute 20 seconds. No trailer lasts an hour. There's a full trailer which lasts just under 2 minutes and doesn't spoil things, which is quite a rarity. Now, when it comes to the menu system, I don't know if it's just my Blu-ray player, but it's meant to replicate the dumb waiter in the film that runs at the centre of the building. And when I select a different option, rather than action the effect, it first has to seek that bit of film that shows the animation rather than just running it straight away, which is very bizarre. So the screen just sort of goes black for a while rather than doing what it's meant to. If anyone's got any advice on how to sort that out, let me know. So the film, well, it was a massive disappointment for me. So just 1 out of 10. Very, very disappointing. Picture, 8. Sound, 7. There's not a lot going on. But, you know, there's no problems with it, so to speak. Extras, 6. And overall, 6. If you love the film, then obviously it's worth a purchase. But if you hated it, well, if you hated it, you're not going to buy it, are you? Or even rent it, or see it in any form whatsoever again. Okay, so in a minute we'll be having a look at the top 10 movie charts, but first of all we'll have a bit of music, and we have the US Bombs and Beetle Boot. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, that was US Bombs with Beetle Boot. That song which I heard recently on Natalie's punk rock show, every Sunday from 5 till 7. Has some fantastic music on it, so do have a listen to that. For now, you're back with me, Dom Robinson, on the DVD Fever Show, and we're listening now to... Well, not listening, well, you're listening to hear me talk. But as I speak, you'll hear the words that bring to you the top 10 movie charts at the moment. And as I mentioned, I go through the US movie charts here for reasons I've explained a million times before. So here we go. Number one, we have The Vow, which took $41.2 million in its opening weekend. God knows why. But a car accident puts Paige, Rachel McAdams, in a coma. And when she wakes up with severe memory loss, her husband Leo, Channing Tatum, works to win her heart again. Sounds thrilling, doesn't it? Giving the film 2.5 stars out of 4, Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times found it pleasant enough as a date movie, but that's all. USA Today wrote it as, or wrote that it may appeal to the most rabid fans of tearjerk romances like The Notebook, but it's a hard-to-swallow maudlin tale. Now, also starring Jessica Lange and Sam Neill, this looks like a syrupy romantic mess, and I do not want to see it. Number two, we've got Safe House, which is took $40.2 million. That stars Ryan Reynolds, and there's going to be more about this one in the new releases, so you'll have to wait a few minutes for that. Number three, we have Journey 2, The Mysterious Island. Now, also known as Journey to the Mysterious Island, this was directed by Brad Peyton, and it's a sequel to the 2008 film Journey to the Centre of the Earth. Sean Anderson accompanies his new stepfather Hank to find his grandfather Alexander, who went missing while exploring a lost island. With the help of Gabato and Kehlani, they reach the island and find Alexander. After a few harrowing encounters, they escape from the island on the submarine Nautilus, returning home. Now, starring Dwayne Johnson, Vanessa Hudgens and Michael Caine, it's definitely a film for kids and older blokes who want to see Miss Hudgens looking pretty, pretty hot. Number four, we have Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace in 3D. Now, this one, the focus is placed on young Anakin Skywalker, who must be trained by Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ewan McGregor, to learn the ways of the Force. Kenobi's master, Qui-Gon Jinn, Liam Neeson, believes Anakin will bring balance to the Force. But we know that Anakin turns into Darth Vader by the time Star Wars A New Hope comes along, so that's a big mistake for sure. They meet up with Anakin because, after sustaining some damage in their starship, given to them by housing Jar Jar in return for saving him from certain death earlier on, the pair can't afford to repair it, so they bet the farm on Anakin to win the pod race, which is the film's equivalent of the chariot race scene in Ben-Hur. Now, this film is one of those films that's it's entertaining to watch, but it just lacks the necessary to make it the great experience you'd expect, especially after parts 4 to 6 in this series, which you've already seen. There's the expected climactic battle, some iffy acting from Anakin's mum, played by Pernilla August, robots and puppets being introduced in the form of C-3PO, R2-D2 and Yoda, all voiced by the same people as before, and the chief bad guy here is Darth Maul, played by Ray Park, who, after this film, charged people £15 for his signature. What a rip-off. Leon's Natalie Portman plays both Naboo ruler Queen Amidala and menial worker Padme, which brings about a necessary decoy strategy later on. And there's cameo backups from Terrence Stamp, Brian Blessed, Celia Imrie, Samuel L. Jackson, Sophia Coppola, Brona Gallagher, and a voice from Lindsay Duncan. However, I still can't accept the voice of Fozzie Bear, Yoda, by Frank Oz. The films he directs are absolutely appalling, and he just makes Yoda sound ridiculous. I think he's since passed away, so you're not going to see any more films from him. I could add, thankfully. It's not thankfully that he's dead, obviously. I'd rather you just was alive and well and just completely losing the interest in making films ever again. Number five. Well, oh yeah, it's also out in 3D now. Yada, yada, yada. George Lucas, you money-grabbing what's it. Number five, we have Chronicle. And it's a science fiction film directed by Josh Trank and written by Max Landis, based on their own story. Presented as found footage from various cameras, the film stars Dane DeHaan, Michael B. Jordan and Alex Russell as a group of Seattle friends who gain powerful superhuman abilities and use them for mischief and personal gain until one of them begins to use his powers for darker purposes. Three high school friends gain superpowers after making an incredible discovery. Soon, though, they find their lives spinning out of control and their bond tested as they embrace their darker sides. Now, watching the trailer, this looks amazing. There's lots of well-done CGI and there's nothing over the top. This looks like a must-see, and it's interesting to see a film that doesn't have any big names in it. Number six, we have The Woman in Black. And in the Edwardian era, young lawyer Arthur Cripps, played by Daniel Radcliffe, lives with his four-year-old son, Joseph, and his son's nanny. Cripps' wife, Stella, Sophie Stuckley, died after childbirth. Arthur has visions of her and is facing financial problems along with stress from his employers. He is assigned to handle the estate of Alice Drablow, who owned Eel Marsh, where she had lived with her husband, son Nathaniel, and sister Jeanette Humphrey, Liz White. Kipps gets a room in the town and makes friends with Sam Daly, Kieran Hines, a wealthy landowner who offers Arthur a place to have dinner with him and his wife, played by Janet McTeer. At the Marsh, Kipps starts working on the paperwork, but he repeatedly hears footsteps and sees a woman dressed in black. Kipps reports a sighting at the local police station. But the police probably decide that they're too busy having a cup of tea to be able to do anything, including getting off their backside and investigating anything at all in the world. Oh, I digress. Anyway, while he's there, two boys bring in their sister, who is drunk, lie, and she dies in Arthur's arms. She is not the first child in town to commit suicide, and the townspeople believe the woman in black comes for their children as revenge for her child being taken from her. Ooh. Now, I've never seen a Harry Potter film, but the trailer, which doesn't give much away, looks suitably spooky and does make the film look well worth a watch. Number seven, we've got The Grey with Liam Neeson, which just looks about as thrilling as exciting as watching paint dry. But then I still can't get my head around Liam Neeson being an action star, even though Unknown was better than Taken. And, you know, the fact that a film with an A-list star has been shoved into the January dumping ground rather than before Christmas for a winter-based film really, really speaks volumes. Number eight, there's Big Miracle, which is something that stars Drew Barrymore and John Krasinski, and it's based on the 1989 book Freeing the Whales by Tom Rose, which covers Operation Breakthrough, the 1988 international effort to rescue grey whales trapped in ice in Point Barrow, Alaska. Now, I got bored senseless halfway through the trailer. You know, you can see how this one's going to play out, predictably. So, I think, you know, I'll pass. And finally, we have number 10, Underworld Awakening. Now, Underworld Awakening is the second sequel in the Underworld series, with Underworld Rise of the Lycans being the prequel to the first film, Underworld, and Underworld Evolution being the first sequel. Got that? Yeah? Good. And now, 6 months after the events of Underworld Evolution, Celine, Kate Beckinsale, was captured by humans. Eventually, both government officials and the public learn about the existence of the two immortal species of vampires and lycans. The crusade and all that war has begun. They must first study and then eradicate them. After being imprisoned in the cryogenic suspension for 12 years, Celine manages to escape the facility. Explosions, action, shouting. Now, while I haven't seen the third film, which featured Rona Meter even, instead of Kate Beckinsale, the first two were entertaining pieces of nonsense which didn't stretch the intelligence. And I saw this one the other day and it does exactly what it says on the tin. There's a plot that's recycled from 100 other films, but you're going to see the action in 3D. And that side of it delivers, as does seeing Kate Beckinsale don her PVC outfit with thigh-high boots. That's distracting me now. So I think we'll have a bit of music while I distract myself further, and then we'll have the new cinema releases out this Friday. So it's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Peeve Show on Manchester's 106.6, and I'm Dom Robinson. And, in this section we'll have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Safe House. This is the film that's number two in the US charts at the moment. And start off with Matt Weston, Ryan Reynolds, is a CIA rookie who is manning a safe house in Cape Town, South Africa, when Tobin Frost, Denzel Washington, the CIA's most wanted rogue agent, is captured and taken to the safe house. During Frost's interrogation, the safe house is overtaken by mercenaries who want him. Now, Weston and Frost escape and must stay out of the gunmen's sight until he can get to another safe house. Now, I'm not a fan of Denzel, but, you know, Ryan's okay, and the trailer doesn't look like a reasonably entertaining piece of nonsense, so, yeah, it's possibly worth a look. Also out this week, we have One for the Money. Now, all the trailers for these films and everything here on the show, it's on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. So, One for the Money, an unemployed and newly divorced Stephanie Plum, Catherine Heigl, lands a job at her cousin's bail bond business, where her first assignment puts her on the trail of a wanted local cop from her romantic past. Also starring Jason O'Mara and John Leguizamo, this sort of action film looks like a thoroughly tedious exercise in how to make a film for the female market. They'll love it. Men will hate it. Just avoid. Also this week, now, I read it as being out last week, but it's been obviously been bumped a week in the meantime. We have The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. And this film follows a group of British retirees who decide to outsource their retirement to a less expensive and seemingly exotic India. Enticed by advertisements for a newly restored Marigold Hotel, and bolstered with visions of a life of leisure, they arrive to find the palace of a shell of its former self. Though the new environment is less luxurious than imagined, they are forever transformed by the shared experiences, discovering that life and love can begin again when you let go of the past. Now, it's got a decent cast with Maggie Smith, Bill Nighy, Judi Dench, Dev Patel, and Tom Wilkinson, but the trailer just played out like a British farce and just really didn't grab me at all. So, never mind letting go of the past, I'll just let go of this film, I think. Also out this Friday, we have Rampart. And it says, "Nothing fascinates like a dirty cop. In real life, they're terrifying, but in the movies, their suspending of law and order can often can open deep explorations of psychology, morality, and violence." So meet Dave Brown, Woody Harrelson. Brown is a cop long ago unleashed from the rules of the Los Angeles Police Department. Roving the streets in his black and white cruiser, he governs and punishes at will. His home life is a riddle. Somehow he has fathered children with two sisters, Anne Hesh and Cynthia Nixon. Somehow he still lives casually with them both, slipping in and out of a family life that's as tangled as his long career on the force. His own daughter calls him date rape. That's because years ago, Brown may have killed a rapist and gotten away with it. The shadow of the incident still haunts him, so when his Rampart division gets caught up in a corruption scandal, Brown makes an easy target. As the controversy seeps through the department and into City Hall, this hardened, reckless officer finds himself at the centre of a sordid LA story. Following up on his Academy Award-nominated The Messenger, writer-director Oren Moverman assembles an impressive team of talent for Rampart. The script is co-written by crime fiction legend James Ellroy, LA Confidential, and the cast includes Ben Foster, also in The Messenger, Robin Wright, Sigourney Weaver, Steve Buscemi, and Ice Cube. That looks pretty good from the trailer, and Woody has proved himself as a good actor on a number of occasions before with Trans-Siberian, and of course Natural Born Killers, which is as far away from his Cheers character as he could ever get. So yeah, it's worth a look, that one. Finally, out this Friday, we have War of the Dead. It's March 1942, and Captain Martin Stone, Andrew Tiernan, leads an American unit on a mission to destroy an enemy bunker, joining forces with an elite platoon of Finnish soldiers, with Captain Niemi, Juku Ahola, and Lieutenant Lasko, played by Mikko Leppilampi. I probably not pronounce that right at all. The troops are torn apart by the same enemy soldiers they killed a few minutes earlier in an ambush. The living dead? Or the evil forces? Or just SS experiments gone wrong? Now, the trailer was all slow-mo and a particular track also thrown in there, and just made no impact on me whatsoever. But, you know, have a look at the trailer, say facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, and see what you think. The track itself that was used was the overused theme from Requiem for a Dream, which is something I've still not got around to watching. And that song's by Prince Negar Gelaga, featuring Star Crimes and A Million, and it's called Introduction. We'll have a bit more music now, and then after that we'll have the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the final section of the first hour of the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And this section we have a look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, starting with Real Steel. Now, it's a gritty white-knuckle action ride set in the near future where the sport of boxing has gone high-tech. Real Steel stars Hugh Jackman as Charlie Kenton, a washed-up fighter who's lost his chance at a title when 2,000-pound, 8-foot-tall steel robots took over from the ring. Now nothing but a small-time promoter, Charlie earns just enough money piecing together low-end bots from scrap metal to get from one underground boxing venue to the next. When Charlie hits rock bottom, he reluctantly teams up with his estranged son Max, Dakota Goya, to build and train a championship contender. As the stakes in the brutal no-holds-barred arena are raised, Charlie and Max, against all odds, get one last shot at a comeback. Now, watching the trailer, it just boils down to basically the robots beating each other up and nothing about any part of the plot. Presuming there is one. While Mark Kermode once said that it's not a load of rubbish like Transformers, the trailer didn't really give me that impression. You know, it just doesn't look any different. So unless I can find something to convince me otherwise, I'll be giving this one a miss. The special features, by the way, you have Countdown to the Fight, the Charlie Kenton story, The Making of Metal Valley, Building the Bots, Sugar Ray Leonard, Cornerman's Champ, deleted and extended scenes with introductions by director Sean Levy, an extended Meet Ambush, deleted Butterfly storyline, and bloopers. Also this week we have Warrior, which stars Tom Hardy from Inception, The Dark Knight Rises, and Joel Edgerton, The Thing. An inspirational and exhilarating rollercoaster of the film, Warrior, it says here, Warrior centres around Tom Hardy, an ex-Marine haunted by a tragic past, who enlists the help of his estranged father, Nick Nolte, to train up for the fight of his life. A former wrestling prodigy, Tommy blazes a path towards Sparta, the biggest winner-takes-all mixed martial arts event in history. His brother, Brendan, Joel Edgerton, an ex-fighter-turned-teacher, also returns to the ring in a desperate bid to save his family from financial ruin. So when Brendan's unlikely underdog rise sets him on a collision course with the unstoppable Tommy, the two brothers must finally confront each other and the forces that pulled them apart in the ultimate face-off. Unfortunately, the trailer makes it look like 2 hours of life-affirming guff with, oh, we can triumph over every last problem, rather than something actually worth watching. So I'll definitely give this one a miss. If you want to watch it, then the extras include Redemption, Bringing Warrior to Life documentary, Brother vs. Brother, Anatomy of the Fight, Philosophy in Combat, Mixed Martial Arts Strategy, Simply Believe, a tribute to Charles Mask Lewis Jr., feature audio commentary with filmmakers and actor Joel Edgerton, Full Contact, a Blu-ray enhanced viewing mode, and The Diner, deleted scene with optional commentary, and also Cheap Shot Skag Reel. Also out this week we have Fright Night. Experience a new dimension of fear as all the action and suspense of Fright Night leap off the screen in mind-blowing Blu-ray 3D. Meet the sexy new neighbour, Jerry Dandridge, Colin Farrell. He's dangerously charming and utterly lethal. That's just because he happens to be a vampire and out for blood. Buckets of it. After high school senior Charlie Brewster, Anton Yelchin, makes the connection between Jerry's suspicious activity and a steadily rising body count, he vows to end the reign of terror next door. But he can't do it alone. His only help is Las Vegas magician vampire slayer Peter Vincent, David Tennant. Together this unlikely duo set out to end Jerry's evil rampage, but Jerry is a ruthless, relentless killer, and he's not going down without a fight. Get set to sink your teeth into this thrilling revamp of the terrifying horror classic, it says here. Featuring a star-studded cast and crawling with bonus, Fright Night in spectacular 3D will captivate you from the very first bite. Well, I don't know, the clips I've seen of it just don't thrill me at all. I mean, I've quite enjoyed the original with Roddy McDowall. I think I'd just stick with that one, to be honest. I don't always go in for remakes, and definitely won't be bothering with this one. Also, we have Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. And shy, withdrawn 8-year-old Sally has been sent to live with her architect father, Guy Pearce, and his new partner, played by Katie Holmes, in the foreboding Victorian mansion of Blackwood Manor. Hopefully it's not Richard Blackwood Manor. Feeling isolated and alone, Sally decides to explore her sinister new surroundings with terrifying consequences. Having discovered a hidden basement, she unwittingly unleashes an ancient and holy presence. There's something alive in the darkness, and it knows her name. Something truly evil, and it needs feeding. From legendary filmmaker Guillermo del Toro, from Pan's Labyrinth and Hellboy, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is nail-biting horror that will make you think twice about turning off the lights. I don't know, this one doesn't interest me at all either. But if it's one for you, then you'll be pleased to know there are some extras. We have a look behind the horror, the story, the build and the creatures. We have character profiles, interviews with Katie Holmes and Guy Pearce and Bailey Madison, teaser trailer and theatrical trailer. And another title out this week, we have Repo Man, which is like a Blu-ray premiere. Arguably the defining cult film of the Reagan era, the feature debut of Alex Cox is a genre-busting mashup of Atomic Age science fiction, post-punk anarchism and conspiracy paranoia, all shot through with heavy doses of deadpan humour and offbeat philosophy. After quitting his dead-end supermarket job, young punk Otto, Emilio Estevez, is initiated as a repo man, after a chance encounter with automobile repossessor Bud, Harry Dean Stanton. An illicit high-voltage life follows, including an adrenalized search for a mysterious 64 Chevy Malibu, loaded with radioactive and extragalactic cargo. With an iconic soundtrack, Iggy Pop, Black Flag, Suicidal Tendencies, stunning Robbie Mueller cinematography and iconoclastic direction, Repo Man remains one of the great debuts of the 1980s. Voted by Entertainment Weekly as one of the top 10 best cult films ever, the Masters of Cinema series is proud to present a definitive director-approved Blu-ray out this week. The features include a new high-definition master in the original aspect ratio of 1.85 to 1, the original mono soundtrack and the 5.1 remix, both in DTS HD Master Audio, English subtitles on the main feature, isolated music and effects track, audio commentary with Cox and executive producer Michael Nesmith, casting director Victoria Thomas, and actors Cy Richardson, Xander Schloss, and Del Zamora. Well, not even Emilio Estevez. There's an all-new 2012 video piece by Cox offering further thoughts from the film. There's also Repo Man, the entire TV version, which says this legendary variant prepared by Cox for network TV incorporates deleted material and surreal overdubs in places of profanity, or in place of profanity. I mean, I've seen that one when it's been on TV before, and that's where the term melon farmer came about. Someone made a website years ago about all the censorship of films, and they called it melon farmer in it, the melon farmer's film censorship or something like that, because a certain other word beginning with MF, two words. Was replaced by Melon Farmer, and he just did it so it sounded just completely ridiculous on this film. Obviously, I can't say what that is at this time of day, but I'm sure you can imagine. Also, the other extras include Repossessed, a retrospective video piece on the making of the film, featuring Cox, producers Peter McCarthy and Jonathan Wax, and actors Del Zamora, Cy Richardson, and Dick Rude. The Missing Scenes, a roundtable viewing of deleted scenes from the film with Cox, Michael Nesmith, real-life neutron bomb inventor Sam Cohen, and character J. Frank Parnell. There's also Harry Zen Stanton, an extended interview with the legendary actor. There's the original theatrical trailer, and also a 44-page full-colour booklet specially created by Cox, entitled The Repo Code, and incorporating all manner of repo ephemera. Other films out this week, we've got Best Laid Plans, Demons Never Die, with Ashley Walters, The Disappearance of Harui Suzumiya, Girl Model, A Private Hell, which is one of those BFI films out on Blu-ray and DVD together, How to Stop Being a Loser, There Be Dragons, The Well Digger's Daughter, and X, Night of Vengeance. Some other TV series and miscellaneous stuff. We have Doogie Howser MD, Season 1, George A. Romero's Dead Time Stories, Volume 2, we've got Santana Greatest Hits, Live at Montreux 2011, and also Who Do You Think You Are, USA, Season 2. And also just a few Blu-ray premieres. We've got Caligula, Unlimited Edition, World War II in 3D, and also Scorpions, Get Your Sting, and Blackout Live in 2011 in 3D. Okay, well, that's everything for this hour. And we're having the second hour. It's all about video games and TV, isn't it? Starting with the top 10 video games charts, and also look at a lot of the new PlayStation Vita stuff that's coming out this week. Let's take us to the top of the hour. Gonna have a bit more music again from Old Suits, and it's another track from their 4-track EP, and this one's called Dance of the Dead. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, back with the second hour of the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And the music you just heard then was another Old Suits song. That one's called Now You're a Ghost. Stay tuned for one more track coming up later on. In this second hour, we start off with video games, so we have a look at the top 10 games charts, plus some new video games releases, and there's also be some video games news. And then we'll have a look at some TV stuff. There's not been a great deal on that's new on the TV this week, so I'll have a brief summary of that, along with some more, look ahead to some more programmes coming up. And finally, a bit of TV news. Okay, so we start off with the charts. We start off with Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, that's at number one. Then we have Final Fantasy 13-2, Then number 3, we have The Darkness 2. Number 4, Metal Gear Solid Collection HD. Number 5, FIFA 12. Number 6, Battlefield 3. Number 7, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number 8, Assassin's Creed Revelations. Number 9, The Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim. And number 10, Mario & Sonic London 2012 Olympic Games, which also features things like equestrian, aquatics, airplanes, probably, I don't know. But don't forget the aquatics. New songs out this week. Not songs. New games out this, well, in the charts. We have Catherine at number 20. And number 26, Grand Slam Tennis 2. And some re-entries. Number 37 for Pro Evolution Soccer 2012. And number 39, Disney Universe. Okay, this week we're having a look at some of the new PlayStation Vita titles that are out, as the console is also released tomorrow. The PlayStation Vita is designed to blur the lines between interactive entertainment and reality in a variety of ways, reaching beyond the capabilities of every handheld gaming console that has come before it. In this model of Vita, players have access to a vast amount of content via improved Wi-Fi, allowing for maximum connectivity wherever you go. An additional model allows for Wi-Fi and always-on 3G connectivity. Its 5-inch OLED front multi-touch display brings brilliant images to life and allows for a new touch-driven navigational system, while the additional multi-touch pad on its back surface will allow users to interact with games and characters that they encounter within them with a simple movement of their fingertips. The real world and game world are seamlessly merged with front and rear camera-enabled augmented reality. And additionally, services created specifically for Vita will be available on the PlayStation Network. These services are designed to help users take their gameplay as well as their interaction with other gamers to new levels. Additional features include dual analog stick controls, as a quad-core CPU, system-specific flashcard media support for game and media saves, mobile, assuming that just means you can't use memory cards from any other console with this one, mobile PlayStation trophy support, built-in 3-axis gyroscope, a 3-axis accelerometer, and GPS functionality. So some of the games that are out. Well, we'll start off with a couple before another song. First one out is Rayman Origins. And Michel Ancel, celebrated creator of Rayman Beyond Good and Evil and The Raving Rabbids, returns to his roots to bring us Rayman Origins, a high-definition 2D side-scrolling platforming adventure. Play Rayman Origins and discover or rediscover the magical universe and legendary 2D gameplay that captivated the hearts of billions of fans. When the Glade of Dreams is overrun by nefarious dark toons, the Fairy Council hastily invokes Rayman to save the day and restore peace to the Glade. Guide Rayman in over 60 vibrant levels of stunning 2D platforming and unlock new abilities along the way in one of the most visually striking platforming games available on the PS Vita. Rayman Origins features over 100 characters, including many of the classic characters revived in their original 2D form, as well as a whole host of new characters. Discover a rich world with 12 unique environments. Unlock new abilities progressively and return to previous levels to discover new paths and hidden secrets. Test yourself in epic boss battles which challenge your skill and speed. Challenge your friends in ghost mode and compete for the best time in speedruns throughout each level. Share your best times with another unlockable gifts using near functionality with your friends. Discover the origins of Rayman by collecting relics throughout the game, and you can find them on your own or share your discoveries with friends using Nier, which is a new PlayStation Vita doobry. Assemble all the relics to reveal frescoes and videos that tell the history of the Glade of Dreams. Also, Rayman Origins uses multi-touch capabilities of the PS Vita to collect lums, defeat enemies, or even to zoom, allowing you to see the beautiful HD graphics in greater detail. Also out is Virtua Tennis 4 on the PS Vita, and this World Tour Edition provides a full console experience at the palm of your hand. With brand new features unique to the PlayStation Vita combined with the high-res graphics and immersive gameplay of the Virtua Tennis series. It features the world's best players. Take control of the top players in the world, with 22 of the world's greatest players competing in 33 stunning stadiums. Touchscreen controls, simple touch controls on the course across all game modes, with front and rear touch panels to navigate players and hit shots. There's also a two-player touchscreen matches on one PS Vita with a simple top-down view. There's a new dynamic online mode. Which is a social new dynamic and social world tour map in online mode, allowing players to share stats, chat, and play online matches. Also, with a Vita camera, you can upload your face into the game as well using that, or put players into any photo you take using the camera. Okay, so we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some more games coming out this week on the PS Vita, including Uncharted Golden Abyss. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And this section, we'll have a look at some more games out this week on the PS Vita. It's all about the PS Vita this week. Also, I'll be getting one for review very shortly, so I'll be able to bring you a review of some of the games on that as well. So we start off with Uncharted Golden Abyss. And uncover the dark secrets of a lost Spanish expedition massacred 400 years ago deep in Central America. And join legendary fortune hunter Nathan Drake in a brand new epic adventure for the PS Vita. Surrounded by temples, ruins and forgotten legends, Nathan finds himself caught in the middle of a bitter rivalry between old friend Jason Dante and Marissa Chase, granddaughter of the eminent archaeologist called in to investigate the site, who has mysteriously vanished without a trace. Immerse yourself in an epic storyline enhanced by intuitive PS Vita controls. Unravel the mysteries of the Golden Abyss using the touchscreen, rear touchpad and rear camera to examine artifacts and solve puzzles. Join Nathan Drake in a full Uncharted adventure for the first time on a portable gaming system, brought to life through stunning environments, an engaging cast of characters, and a cinematic storyline. You can also explore forgotten ruins and hidden caverns, infiltrate deadly guerrilla camps, and work together with Nathan's companions to solve puzzles and reach hidden areas. Also out, we have Wipeout 2048. And in the year 2048, the world witnesses the emergence of breathtaking anti-gravity racing. Sure, they've experienced that before with the other games. But daring to dream, the newly formed racing teams defied centuries of belief as they reinvented physics, and Wipeout was born. Racing at street level in this prologue to the Wipeout series, hold on tight as you hunt down your foes, claim the golden medals of glory, and write your name into the history books. Featuring stunning graphics and a pumping soundtrack, you can now feel the true force of Wipeout with unique touch and tilt controls. Fly solo or hook up with friends online. This is for a shot of adrenaline-fueled racing like never before. The future of racing is here. R.I.P. Gravity. You can pilot your ship intuitively using the touchscreen and the motion controls. You experience the thrill of the race while seeing your fellow pilots using the Vita's front camera. You get 10 brand new tracks with touch and tilt controls. There's adrenaline-fueled low-level racing through the streets of Nova State City. Also, you have 8-player online races. Oh, you also have cross-play with PS3 Wipeout users. And just one last game that's out this week. We have Ridge Racer. In Ridge Racer for the PS Vita, players will experience the stunning graphics that exploit the full power of the Vita alongside dynamic audio and white-knuckle races from players against players from all over the world. Then, of course, there's the unbeatable sheer thrill and the satisfaction of conquering a tight corner at a hair-raising speed with their new Vita in hand. Features include vivid high-contrast graphics with advanced lighting graphics and making full use of the OLED screen and paint-in processor. There's dynamic audio that change and evolve along with the racing situation. There's new player customizable drift system. You can race with players anywhere in the world using the console's different network functionalities, whether it's 3G, Wi-Fi or the local network. Okay, so we'll have a bit more music, and then we're going to have some video games news. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show. Me, Dom Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. And this section we'll be having a look at some video games news. Starting with the news that Games Oxford Street Shop and GameStation's Birmingham New Street Store will open at midnight tonight for the PlayStation Vita launch. Eager Oxford Street customers will be eligible to win prizes, receive signed copies of games, and attend a PlayStation Vita after party. As the official launch partner, we've been leading the way by giving gamers a chance to sample the console across 600 game and GameStation stores, and the excitement built around the PlayStation Vita launch shows that handheld gaming is as popular as ever, explained Game and GameStation marketing manager Anna Marie Mason. With both our flagship stores opening at midnight to celebrate the launch of the PS Vita, we're getting set for a fantastic night of gaming, and we're looking forward to giving customers their earliest chance possible to buy their own console. Wipeout 2048 developers Carl Jones and Amy Ledger will be on hand to sign games, while one lucky fan will receive a year's supply of PlayStation Vita titles. The invitation-only after-party, meanwhile, will take place at Oxford Street's PS Vita rooms, where fans can enjoy DJ sets, refreshments, and sample upcoming releases. It says there are no plans currently to roll out nationwide midnight PlayStation Vita launches, which does seem rather odd. If you've got 600 stores around the country, and you've got the biggest thing that's happening in gaming this year, well, at least until Nintendo's Wii U comes out later on, why not take the opportunity to have it in all your stores? You know, you're just going to have... it makes sense, surely. But I'm not in marketing. But hey, there you go. To be honest, I tried doing... one of the things I did at university was actually marketing as part of a management course. And since I left university, then sort of look at... say if you just watch TV and see that all the people involved in marketing, they're too busy trying to work out what colour the on-screen logo should be. And basically all the people in marketing, especially in TV, just need a good hard slap. But I digress. We also have the news that, talking about game, Tekken 3D Prime Edition will not be stopped by game. Namco Bandai's portable fighting game will not be shipped to game stores or available to purchase through its website. Apologising to affected customers, Game explained that it was business as usual with the exception of the 3D fighting game. A game rep said recently, "There is lots happening in our stores and online this weekend. We have exciting new releases including UFC Undisputed 3, some great half-term deals including £50 off Kinect, and big reductions on chart-topping EA titles. The exception is Tekken for 3DS, which is not in stock, and we have apologised to any customers this has affected." Game's ability to stock new releases was recently called into question after it lost credit insurance with a number of publishing agencies. The high street retailer's financial concerns were partly alleviated upon receiving lender support. Released in Europe last Friday, Tekken 3D Prime Edition includes over 40 characters from the history of the Tekken series, along with a mix of both new and familiar stages in which to fight. It will also feature online multiplayer over Wi-Fi and StreetPass support for exchanging cards and data with other players. For the first time on the Nintendo 3DS, Tekken 3D Prime Edition will also feature, or also include, the feature-length 3D CGI movie Tekken Blood Vengeance. I mentioned a few weeks ago, that came out on DVD. So, yeah, if you're going to get the game, then you'll have it as well. There's also some news. The PlayStation Vita will not support PS2 or PS3 games, Sony has revealed. However, PSP titles will be supported. PSP titles and supported minis will be available on the handheld device, while PS1 classics will be available at a later date, explained Sony. PlayStation does not have plans to make PS Vita compatible with PS3 or PS2 titles at this point. And users can, that's what Sony confirmed. Users can play supported digital PSP titles and supported minis, it continued. In regards to some PS1 classics titles, we will announce further details when they are ready. Sony recently confirmed pricing for first-party downloadable titles on Vita, and has said that retail titles purchased over Sony Entertainment Network will be given a discount. And also some more Sony news, and Sony has distanced itself from announcing the PS4 in 2012. Sony US boss Jack Tretton said that the firm was too busy focusing on the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita to be thinking about launching new technology. In terms of when you talk about the next generation and when you announce it, it really depends on the health of the existing platform and the other things you have going on, he said. And right now we're focused on the PlayStation 3 and I've got another platform, Vita, to get out the door in 7 days. So I don't want to be thinking about trying to launch new technology anytime soon. I want to focus all our energy on our console business, which is really just hitting its stride, and Vita, which really deserves a dedicated push from us. He concluded, "I quite frankly would be very distracted if I had to be talking about next generation hardware this year." Sony has already confirmed that the PS4 will not be announced at this year's E3 event in Los Angeles. I'd love to go there, actually. Anyone going? Can I stow away, please? I'd love to. It's also recently claimed that it's under less pressure than its rivals to announce its next generation hardware. Is it? Well, I mean, Nintendo have already got their Wii U coming out later this year. So the Xbox 360 and PS Well, I don't have the PS3. We've got an Xbox 360. That's doing quite well as it's on itself. You know, I don't see why that needs to get another console. Seems to be fast enough. And if you've got HD graphics, we can do everything. We can display everything that your telly will let it. And you've got all the Dolby Digital 5.1 sound. What else do you need? Unless you got it, injected straight into your eyeballs. Oh, I've given that one away now. Patent pending. You can just give me the money if you decide to do that yourself. Okay, so we'll have a look at some TV programmes watching the past week in a moment after a bit of music. And then to follow a bit later on, some TV programmes coming up. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever show. With me, Dom Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. And at this point, I normally have a look at some of the TV programmes watched in the past week, predominantly talking about new stuff. But there's not been a lot on. It's just been a bit of a dull week, to be honest. There's one episode of Inside Men left, which, I mean, that's really good, but I say it's nothing new. That series is really going from strength to strength. So if you've not seen it yet, then, before you watch the last episode, they probably have the whole series on iPlayer, so do have a watch of that. That's worth watching. I've given up on Prisoners' Wives after two episodes because that was just appalling. Actually, I watched about 5 minutes at the end of the third episode, and that was just boring. It's a drama for women, and I'm a man, so I should have realised. It teased us by filling the first episode with Emma Rigby, and then it just fell apart. 10 o'clock live, that's just getting worse and worse. Since they ditched Listen to Mitchell, which was the best thing. Although Charlie Brooker's Sun poem was a great early highlight of episode 2. If you look for that on YouTube, you'll be able to find it. It's probably about 3 billion hits by now. However, it did show up that the rest of the show that followed was absolutely appalling. It was a sketch with the normally good Jimmy Carr, which just had him being squirted with blood from an NHS patient, and that was the funniest bit of it. The rest of it, any supposed attempts at satire, were just rubbish. And there was a bit at the start where Lauren Laverne tried to do a joke about the 4-minute warning, and the only person that laughed was Jimmy Carr, because he's paid to. I've since found out why she's on the show, because she's obviously not there for her, whether she's any good or not. Apparently her husband is one of the executive producers, which speaks volumes, because she is absolutely useless. Someone says she's there as eye candy, but she's not even that. She's just pointless. I'm not a fan of hers at all. I had last week off work, and so I spent a lot of the time catching up with saved episodes of Mitivo of Homes Under the Hammer. I love that show. Some stuff that's coming up this week. We've got the Brit Awards 2012, which is on tonight at 8 o'clock on ITV. James Corden hosts the most prestigious event in the pop music calendar. The 32nd Brits show comes from the O2 Arena in London, and it features live performances from Adele, Rihanna, Coldplay, Noel Gallagher, Florence and the Machine, Ed Sheeran, Bruno Mars and Blur, who are also taken to the stage to pick up the Outstanding Contribution to Music Award. A big battle this year for the MasterCard British Album of the Year, and it will be fiercely contested by Adele, Coldplay, Ed Sheeran, Florence and the Machine, and perennial nominee PJ Harvey. I think she gets nominated even if she's not got an album out. I never hear her music being played, and I never look out for it either. But she always seems to turn up in the nominations. Maybe husband's the executive producer of the Brits. It's all sort of nepotism in TV, isn't it? We've got the umpteenth series of Benidorm. That's on ITV at 9 o'clock on Friday. And it's the first day of the holidays, and the Solana is in chaos, with Matteo and Leslie barely able to keep control. They are waiting for the appearance of new manager Joyce Temple Savage, but a coachload of angry holiday makers arrives first. Kenneth is now proprietor of the Solana's new hair salon, and he and Gavin take time to comfort the recently widowed Jacqueline. However, the pair get a shock when they see what seems to be the ghost of a husband. Meanwhile, Joyce watches what's going on and is determined to put Solana on the road to the four-star respectability. But is she prepared for what she's got herself into? Starring Jake Canuso, Janine Davitsky, Siobhan Finneman, Adam Gillen, Tim Healy and Kenny Ireland. I stopped watching this I love the first two series, and then I saw the hour-long special they did, and that was... And then the series three onwards was just hour-long episodes, and I watched the first one and then gave up. It was boring, quite boring to be honest, so I don't bother with that anymore. Now, something that's fairly new, well, the first episode has already been on Sunday, but I've not caught up with it yet, is Homeland. But if you've not seen it yet, then I won't spoil anything, because obviously if I'd be spoiling it for you, I'd be spoiling it for myself. But it'll be on 4OD, no doubt. The compelling award-winning US thriller starring Claire Danes and Damian Lewis comes to Channel 4. When CIA agent Carrie Matheson's unorthodox investigation of threats to US security in Iraq leads to a serious diplomatic incident, she is stripped of her field status and assigned to her desk job. Although her investigation has been cut short, she hears from a condemned Iraqi source that an American prisoner of war has been turned. Carrie becomes convinced that this information relates to the return of Sergeant Nicholas Brody, who was missing in action for 8 years. After receiving intelligence on an Al-Qaeda safe house in Afghanistan, Navy SEALs storm the house, kill 13 terrorists, and found Brody in a locked cell. So it stars Claire Danes, Damian Lewis, Marina Baccarin, David Harewood, Diego Klattenhoff, and Jackson Pace. And as I say, the first episode has been on already, but I've not had time to see it yet. That was on at 9:30 on Sunday, because everything got bumped for Coronation Street. They shoved in an extra episode at 8 o'clock, which meant that BBC One didn't want to lose viewers for Call the Midwife's final episode, which I don't watch because it's another drama for women. And so that got bumped to 8:30. So basically everything on every channel that they care about ratings for just got bumped half an hour just because of bloody Coronation Street. But I don't watch that either. But yeah, every episode afterwards from now on will be on at 9 o'clock on Sunday on Channel 4. Unless they get no ratings, and like they do with everything else, they just shove it on more 4 at 3 in the morning. Okay, we'll have a bit of TV news in a moment, and then but before that, I'm going to have a song from Genesis called The Brazilian, which, do I still use it? I've used it on some of my Dom Says videos on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com/DomSaysXL, DomSezXL. For most of the videos I did between sort of 2010-2011, I had this sort of a crescendo from it, just over you know, at the end of it. And everyone kept asking me, what is this piece of music? And, well, it's Genesis, The Brazilian. It was the last track on the 1985 Invisible Touch album, or maybe it was 1986. I don't know, my brain's gone. But here it comes anyway. Genesis, The Brazilian. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Genesis with The Brazilian, which I say features in a lot of my Dom Says XL videos from around 2010-2011. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. And this last section of the hour, and also of the show this week, we have some TV news. Starting with the news that a disabled comedy has been ordered by Channel 4. And they've announced that their latest commission from the Comedy Lab pilot strand, I Am Spasticus, which was broadcast in 2005. The five-part series, expected to tie in with the channel's coverage of the London Paralympic Games later this year, will be written by and starring disabled people. The pilot was broadcast on 17th of May 2005. Jamie O'Leary, who produced, wrote and directed the original pilot, will act as executive producer for I Am Spasticus, which he describes as naughty and risque. In a style similar to that of Dom Jolly's Trigger Happy TV, the show will mix hidden camera pranks and stunts in an attempt to highlight and explore the public's attitudes to disabled people. Characters in the pilot included a porn-loving dwarf who recruits tall members of the public to hand in magazines from the top shelf, an overtly PC wheelchair user who tries to get record companies to change the lyrics of famous songs, and a one-armed man who surprises people with his artificial limb. Jamie O'Leary says, I'm Spasticus uses the world of comedy to explore the world of disability, employing disabled writers and a cast of disabled on-screen talent to play pranks on an unsuspecting general public. Whilst this is far from revenge TV, we hope it's both barrier and groundbreaking. It will never be worthy in box-ticking, but hopefully funny, and very funny. Nerys Evans, Channel 4's Comedy Commissioner, adds, "We're very excited to be doing a show that, first and foremost, will be very funny, and also showcases some of the very best disabled talent, both on-screen and behind the camera." A Zeitgeist TV production, the 2005 pilot won a Superfest International Disability Award. I really enjoyed that pilot. It's well worth a watch. I can still remember it now. I'm just amazed it's taken 7 years to get a whole series out of it. Then again, maybe they're actually taking the time to write something, because something like Pete vs. Life was meant to be a pilot and just ended up being straight into a full series, and that just, well, after two series, that's been canned, probably because it's bloody awful. Sticking with the same channel, there's also the news that musical comedy duo The Rubber Bandits getting a Channel 4 pilot. The commission comes off the back of the duo's success as part of Channel 4's new online talent platform, Comedy Blaps. The musical comedians created three videos for the Blaps strand, with one attracting over 800,000 hits on YouTube. Rubber Bandits, a 30-minute TV pilot, is the first commission to come from Comedy Blaps, an initiative that launched in November 2011 with the task of helping to develop new programme ideas for the channel and discover the next big things of comedy. Rubber Bandits consists of Bob McLean, aka Mr. Chrome, and Dave Chambers, who goes under the name of Blind Boy Boat Club. The duo come from Limerick in Ireland, always perform with plastic bags on their heads. McLean and Chambers write and perform various satirical songs, some of which are adult-themed, with controversial messages. As well as a strong online following, an iTunes album and appearances on MTV, Iggy, or MTV Iggy, the duo play gigs live around the world. In March, they are booked to appear at Canadian Music Week. And it's time for one last bit of news this week. We have the news, again sticking with the same channel, that Harry Hill is to move to Channel 4. The surrealist comic and TV burp host is in talks and close to signing a major deal with the channel, according to the Daily Mirror. The move could involve Hill, real name Matthew Hall, making a brand new sketch show for the channel and possibly a movie for cinema release. If we must. A tabloid newspaper reports a source close to the comic saying, "Harry has lots of ideas and fancies doing something different for a while, especially his own film. That doesn't really fit in with ITV's plans, so he's interested in doing a deal with Channel 4. It has been widely reported that the comic is sick of TV burp, and they're watching hours of TV to compile each weekly episode of the ITV ratings hit has left him feeling suicidal." Well, it would do if you're watching loads of ITV output. Oh, Jesus, it's terrible. Especially Benidorm, which I mentioned earlier on. Hill's refusal to sign up for more series of TV burp past the end of its current contract with ITV will see the show draw to a close after the 12th series, which begins, well, it's already begun, isn't it? The consequent end of the hit series is widely believed to have caused Hill to fall out and leave his long-term manager and TV burp executive producer, John Thoday, the production management company Avalon. Well, I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about Avalon. They do some good programs, but then again, one of the videos I put online on YouTube, they took down with a copyright strike, and I eventually got it removed in return for me removing the video, so I got rid of the copyright strike, but I still wasn't happy with them. But I digress. Anyway, Channel 4 basically offered Harry big budgets and a lot of creative freedom to make what he wants, and that's what's attracted him to the offer more than the paycheck. He's been earning millions with ITV for years, so it's not all about the money, but for Harry it's all about doing the projects he loves, and so it seems almost certain he'll head to Channel 4, and all his fans would love to see a Harry Hill movie. Well, his fans would. Those of us who don't give a damn about him couldn't care less either way. Okay, so that's everything for the DVD Fever show this week. It's all your movies, video games and TV. And just check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. And to finish the show this week, we're going to have the fourth track from Old Suits. Well, fourth of the four-track EP, because that's how a four-track EP works. And it's going to be the anthemic It's Never Easy. This is 106.6.
106.6.